Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Warning, this podcast contains spoilers for the series finale of Succession on HBO. Hello, my name is Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Rosie Knight.
And welcome to X-Ray Vision, the Crooked Media podcast, where we're diving deep into your favorite show this episode, movies, comics, and pop culture, but really just one show, the finale, the series finale of Succession.
Yep. In this episode, we've got actually kind of two finales because it's the finale of Market Moves. The Market Moves comes to an end as we talk about Succession, season 4, episode 10, the series finale. One of the greatest series finales of all time.
Sure.
I think I'm saying it. It's happening.
Agreed.
And in a nerd out, we've got Joe talking about Netflix's Voltron Legendary Defender. Very excited to hear that because people love that show and the fandom is very passionate.
Coming up, Market Moves, the finale, series finale of Market
Series
Moves.
Finale.
Too much pain, here's what I say. Pain Sponge is here, you can take a break. Put a sticker on your brain, I can save your space. And I don't like eyes because they're face eggs. Clap along if you'd suck the biggest dick in the room. Clap along if you feel like a puppet for Big Luke. Clap along if you feel like your wife's lobes are filled with the juice. Clap along if you feel like sucking D is for Market Moves.
Market Moves!
Let's go!
Market Moves album coming soon.
Let's go! It's the finale of Market Moves. Yes. Oh, folks, what a show. What a finale. What an ascendance by Thomas the Quisling Wamsgans. Let's get into it. We start on deal day, New York City. Ken arrives at Waystar HQ. He's dapping up the crew. He's saying hi to everybody. Hey, Corpy the DM, everybody. Enter Telly. Telly, who I love, has entered into our lives kind of late in the life of the series, but Telly is, and every organization needs a Telly. Telly is the person who's actually good at their job, but the powers that be keep Telly hidden away, like in a closet somewhere. And you only really break Telly out when you need him, but you do it privately so nobody knows that Telly is actually the one who knows shit. So,
Jason, are you saying they stashed Telly so nobody saw the tapes? They were like, keep him away.
That's really what happened. So Ken walks in and Telly, as the truth teller and the guy who sees clearly, immediately briefs Ken on what's going on with Stewie. He just got off the phone with Stewie's guy, and they don't have Stewie. And Ken is like, what? Who? What? And he pulls himself together and he says, okay, I can get Stewie on board. I'll just get a phone call with Stewie. And this is a play and this is just a smokescreen and I can get Stewie. And if I don't get Stewie, there's like I have some backups in mind. So we have a path to getting the votes. And then Telly is like, okay, but like your votes include Roman. And where is Roman? No one's seen Roman. Nobody's heard from Roman. And Ken is like, don't worry, I got Roman. I don't know where Roman is, but I got him. I have his votes. I got him. It doesn't matter. I don't know where he is. We go to Lucas HQ, where Shiv is telling Lucas the Stewie news, that Ken doesn't have Stewie anymore. And she rattles off a straw poll. She's got it all. Listen, Telly does it in his head. Shiv needs a little piece of paper, but that's okay. And she rattles it off. And she's like, listen, you can cut the pizza any way you want, but the pie is all yours, Lucas. It's all Gojo, baby. It's in the fucking bag. And also, not that I care about it, Luke, but, you know, Tom?
Remember him?
Whatever, you know, like whichever way you want to go with that, I'm good. And Lucas is like, listen, I've had a few vibe checks with Tom. And, you know, what do you think? What do you think? And Shiv is like, well, and I quote, he's very competent, but if he irks you or if it's complicated, it is okay. He is very plausible corporate matter, but he's also just a highly interchangeable modular part. And I would say that to his face.
She would. She definitely would.
She would say that
she
to his
absolutely
face.
Fucking would.
And she, you know, she lets Lucas know in closing that Tom will suck the biggest dick in the room. So let me ask prompt number one. Is that the nicest thing that Shiv has ever said about Tom, that he will suck the biggest dick in the room?
You know what? I will say, I believe in this moment, it is probably the best thing she's ever done for Tom.
I agree.
Because I think this is the most important line in all of Succession,
yes,
which is fantastic. And
that's
I think
right.
This is the moment that Lucas Mattson knows Tom is his guy. Because you know
that's
what?
Right.
Shiv can say that to Tom's face. Tom would probably agree and add some flowery language about how good he would be at sucking the biggest dick. But if... Shiv would never say that about herself. Shiv does not see herself that way, and that is what Lucas needs. So this is Shiv's greatest gift to Tom.
It's a great call, and it leads us into our next prompt, which we will get to shortly. But I think you're right. Number one, Shiv would say this and much worse to Tom's face. She'd
uh-huh.
say, she said lots of truly, truly awful things over the course of this series to directly to Tom's visage, including, as I love to point out, asking him on his wedding night if they could have an open
Whew.
Marriage. I agree with you. Clearly, Lucas wants a Quisling, wants
mm-hmm.
a puppet, does not want anybody with their own thoughts, who will voice their own thoughts, who will even seem as if they're voicing their own thoughts. He wants a pure cutout and Shiv letting Lucas know that Tom will drop to his knees at the snap of a finger lets Lucas know that, yeah, I think Tom is the guy. Shiv takes a call from her mom, Lady Caroline, the wonderful Lady Caroline coming in hot.
Coming in hot in these last two episodes. Absolute,
so
like, star fucking power.
Unbelievable stuff. So we learn that Roman has gone to ground at Mummy's house in Barbados. Wonderful.
Delightful.
Wonderful little getaway place, although Lady Caroline is, you know, lets her know that, you know, the house, obviously, it's still leaking. It's a shitbox. No, it's a beautiful mansion. Shiv tells Lucas, okay, I have a location on Roman. He's with my mom. I'm going there to get him because we need to have, you know, let's get as many of the Roys on side as we can so this thing isn't perceived as, quote, Lady Macbeth part two. Which brings us to prompt number two. So we see in this scene that Lucas is a little, there is a Vanity
mm-hmm.
Fair piece about Lucas, and the art is an illustration of Shiv holding Mattson strings, making him dance to the tune. So the Mattson is the puppet, not Shiv, and clearly this profile is wondering, you know, who is really running things at Gojo? And here is Shiv showing at least that she has some awareness of that perception being out
mm-hmm.
there, saying, you know, I don't want this to look like Lady Macbeth part two. And if we get another Roy, if we get Roman on side, now it looks like there's two Roys holding Lucas's strings. And it's not just me being
not
the
just
Lady
me,
Macbeth.
Not just
yeah,
a
yeah,
woman
yeah.
doing it.
So this leads us to our prompt. Shiv comes from the political world, communications and politics. How did she fuck this up? How did she, you know, if it was Ken, even, or certainly her dad, or any other of the power players here, they'd be on the phone to their version of Hugo or Carolina, and they'd be like, okay, here's this profile's coming. Make sure it makes me look like the puppet, not Lucas. I'm the puppet. How did she fuck this up?
So the headline is really interesting because it says, like, is Lucas Mattson taking over the world? But then it has the puppet, Shiv puppeteering him. I actually think this is Shiv's own arrogance. I think Shiv and Kendall have the same problem, which is they have so much self-belief. Shiv says something really interesting later this episode where she says, like, Mattson believes in me. And it's like, she truly believes. She's like, well, this is just like a funny image. Like, and also, it wouldn't be so terrible if there was one bit of information that did look like I was the one who was puppeteering him. Even if it's just like a joke, I want people to know that I'm a partner in this. And there's this kind of like sparring ground. Look, Shiv's biggest mistake throughout all of this, as much as it has been absolutely joyful to watch her stab her brothers in the back.
I love it.
She knew Mattson was an abuser. She knows he hates women. He makes Holocaust jokes. He is not a person you can trust. And he's also not a person whose ego you can ever stop stroking. And I think it is the, like you said, Shiv fucked this up because it's that duality of that. It's not a coincidence he's reading that piece and she says that line about Tom and then he makes that choice.
Yeah.
I think if the image had been the other way around, if it had been him puppeteering her, this kind of weird, you know, caricature, he might have been more amenable to her being the puppet. But I think really it was never going to happen because she's a woman.
I go the other way. I think it might have happened. The things that Lucas says about Shiv later lead me to believe that, you know, he loves pushing boundaries. And I think, you know, given the right circumstances, he'd love to have Shiv working for him to push those boundaries, you know, whenever he felt like it. But I also feel like, one, you're right. This is Shiv's arrogance. She says, as Lucas is looking at the piece, oh, do you want me to call the reporter? She's the reporter on speed dial. She probably sourced for him and probably told,
She probably approved the artist.
She probably said, and by the way, just, you know, on background, like I am, like I'm a partner and all this stuff. So I think this, you're right. This was her arrogance. This was her wanting to signal like, hey, I'm a player. I'm also a player. And I think it fucked her up. But I do think that there is a world in which Shiv acts supine enough and spineless enough and is on top of this kind of messaging, you know, is communicating and broadcasting to everyone who will listen, hey, it's Lucas running things. It's Lucas running things. I'm just, he just wants me here like as a flag, a Roy flag. And also because I have the next in line Roy baby in my belly. I think there's a world in which Lucas would have gone for it.
I think you're right. I actually think that shows how naive Shiv was in this situation. Yeah. 'Cause actually that's a very easy PR message. And she could have even, like, if she could have just gotten over this need to be like her brothers, she could have just even acted that way to Mattson in the room. Yeah. She's always coming in trying to talk about, like, numbers and, like,
hey,
power.
We got it.
It. And it's like, you know what? One, Shiv, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
None of you do. None of you are serious people. That's the realest thing Logan ever said.
Sadly,
none of the Roys are serious
Logan
people.
Logan was right.
Logan was right. Ding, ding, ding. Ring the bell. But also, like, you could have just played him. Mattson is also not a serious person. Like, you could have played the subservient woman who's just going to do whatever he says and then actually gotten your power from just the fact that he really wouldn't have known what was going on outside of his little fantasy in his head. But instead, she wanted to play the big balls, you know, tough girl boss situation. And as we know, that never goes well.
It does not go well. Shiv then calls Tom. And she has an interesting proposition. She says, hey, wouldn't it be great, you know, if you were so amenable to continue, like, maybe living this very, very toxic lie of ours? Wouldn't that be convenient? You know, we can lock it down right now. We can lock it back down and start living as husband and wife again. You know, if you're into that, what do you think? you know, what do you say? What's up? This is probably the smartest thing that Shiv has done in this entire series, because I think this is the thing that gives her the out that we see at the end of the episode. And Tom says he doesn't know.
I totally agree. Okay, mini prompt. Do you think Shiv means it? Because there is a line where she says to him, you know, we've already said the worst things you can ever say to each other. So, like, we're basically starting here knowing the worst things about each other. That, to me, actually sounds like there is at least 5% of her who's like, oh, maybe this could be the least terrible option for me. Rather than just, like, it being kind of a pretense, I think there is a tiny piece of her that sees some kind of safety net in Tom emotionally or something. I think there's, like, a sparkle there that this isn't just a pretense. I think there's something in there where Shiv knows, like, she's a horrible person, but here's somebody who knows that too and accepts her.
I think that there is that. You know, it's that very, it's that thing from, that maybe people have experienced in toxic and or codependent relationships where it's bad, but the badness is kind of all you know.
Yes.
And you're comfortable with the badness. I think that there is something to that. I also think it's a, I think it's a power move from Shiv as well, in which she is kind of, you know, just as she was saying to Lucas, like, let's project a unified front, continuity. We get the Roys on side. It looks good. I think from her perspective, it's going to be me. I'm CEO. I bring my husband along. He's subservient to me.
We have a child with the Roy name.
We have a child with the Roy name. It looks great. The Roys are continuing to run Waystar. And it burnishes my reputation as, you know, the big boss lady. And I think it looks good. And I think that's the play that she's
on. Yeah, 95% power play, 5% like maybe an inkling of something real deep down.
I think she thinks she's saving Tom.
Yes, she does.
At this point in time.
Oh, the irony.
Greg, who has overheard this phone call, immediately scampers off to Ken's camp with the news of Roman's location. Ken then calls mom and confirms. And he tells his new assistant, New Jess, who he refers to as New Jess.
Good for Jess. I'm glad she just got the fuck out of there.
He doesn't even know her name.
Doesn't know her name. New Jess.
New Jess. He tells New Jess, hey, listen, book me on the on our fastest private jet to the Caribbean. Shiv arrives first in Barbados to find Roman with fresh stitches over his brow. Ken then follows as when Ken is pulling in, he finally gets in touch with Stewie, who basically assures him, like, yeah, it's all good. We got it. Ken and Shiv then spar on which side Roman is on, in front of Roman. And Roman is, like, you know, waffling back and forth. Ken is losing his mind over it. Shiv then, like, absolutely rubs her assumed victory. And this is pure Shiv.
Oh, my gosh.
She thinks she's won. It's not even... The game hasn't even started.
There's, like, no question to her, though.
There's no time. Yeah, she's got it fucking sewn up.
I won, and you guys are fucked, and you just need to accept it and celebrate me for fucking once. She won.
She does, like, the Allen Iverson fucking step over of Ken, and it is, it's almost, you can see this, everything that happens in Barbados, including this kind of beginning. And this is what's so great about this show, is that you can really feel this cycle of the siblings come together.
Yeah.
One of them, one or several of them, think they've won whatever the thing is. Now they're bickering and rubbing in each other's face. Then they have a big blow up. Then they come together, and then it all falls apart, starting the cycle again. Like, this cycle, you just can feel that it has taken place multiple times over multiple things over the course of their lives.
You know what? It's such brilliant writing, because in that moment, even though, like, Shiv is making so many bad choices throughout this show, when she says to Kendall, she's like, I won. Like, can't you just be happy for me one time? Like, can't you just celebrate me? I actually was like, Yeah, right? Fucking yeah. Because yeah. You know what? They never do. Like, even though I knew it was going to be a short-lived victory for her, I'm like, you know what? For once, she was the one who managed to fuck you guys over. And it seems like most of her life that has not been... She has not been the winning party, you know? But you're right, that cycle of seeing them and that unbelievable closeness that we get when they come together. And then it's you know, it's the cycle of... It's the promise, the betrayal, the promise, the betrayal, the promise, the betrayal. That's and it was started by their dad.
I completely agree with you about that. It would be wonderful if the Roys were less toxic than they are and less, you know, traumatized, because clearly Shiv must have done things over the course of her life that would and should garner praise from her brothers. At the same time, I look at this and I'm like, man, Shiv, you actually have to win first. And
she's
then
an idiot.
Make
like,
them
that's
deal
the real
with it.
That's,
and
that's
then say,
my,
deal with it.
My favorite thing about this episode is that they managed to balance these moments where you're just so invested in the characters, while also always reminding you, like, these are terrible people and they're fucking idiots. Like, they're really, really stupid and arrogant. And that is going to be their downfall. And even that downfall comes with a cushion of billions of dollars.
We'll get to that in a moment, because I really can't wait to talk about that. X-Ray Vision will be back.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
And we're back. Tom and Greg are at a gallery opening with Lucas.
Perfect.
Lucas has been dragging both of them around, doing this kind of like open-ended vibe check that, you know, it's unclear that Tom and Greg really know that's what it is, but he's been keeping them close.
Yeah.
Tom really can't figure out how to talk about art. I forget the line. What does he say? The colors really go well. And then Lucas walks away and he goes over to Greg and basically rakes Greg over the coals for not jumping in to save like a lumpy conversation and letting him say, like, I guess the colors go well. Like, does that even work? Is that good?
Yeah. Greg's like, shouldn't you have said together? And he's like, yeah, no, like, no, the that... colors go well. It's fine. It's fine.
Tom is like, listen, you need to figure it out because like you're fucked. Like Lucas hates you, like he's gonna cut off your fucking head and fucking cut off your dick and you're done, like you're gonna be making like no money, you're gonna be making like $40,000 a year. And Greg's like, actually he likes me. And Tom is like, no, he fucking does not like you. Prompt number three, Rosie, for people who don't care about art, how do you pretend to care about art? What is something you can say about a piece of art that you don't care about that will make the person you are standing with think this person really knows art?
Okay, just say like a long word. So be like, I've gone to many gallery openings. When I was a teenager in London, they would have them all the time and we would just go in them and just rinse all the free drinks. Like just drink every glass of wine. Like, and a lot of times they want kind of scrubby looking kids in there because they feel like it makes it feel like...
Right, makes it
real.
It makes
like
it authentic.
Street. Yeah, authentic. Like they're gentrifying the neighborhood with a gallery. Let's let some kids in. So we've been doing it all the way. So here are some great lines. This is the kind of shit you hear when you go to these things. That if you're not sure what to say, just look at it and be like, oh, it's so esoteric.
Oh, I like
that's
that.
That's a good one. You can also be like, yeah. This one's really existential. Just like put a long word if it begins with an E. you know, something like that. Or if you want to be like, if you're trying to impress Lucas Mattson, I'd just go around and be like, oh, this is all terrible. This is shit.
Yeah.
Like, just act like you don't like it. Like, you know so much about art that this art is terrible.
Right. I'd be like, let me try it. I'm standing next to Lucas. This one's shit. This one's shit. Also shit. This one is powerfully erotic.
Yes, that's perfect. This is like, Lucas would hire you as CEO. Goodbye, Tom. That's like, he'd be like, okay, here's $10 million. Buy me a piece of art. Powerfully erotic art.
The siblings come back together at sunset in Barbados. And here is really where I'm like, you can, you know, whatever they were arguing about, the cars, the toy, their toys, video games, whatever it was that they argued about as kids, you can see how this exact cycle played out over the course of their lives. They argued and now they come back together somewhere on the veranda, at the out in the, you know, in the woods, on the edge of the property, and smoking weed or having drinks, and now they're coming back together. So this is what they're doing at sunset. They've joined back together to try and figure out how to take control of the family legacy. But it starts with Shiv. Once again, she's won. She wants to let them know that she has won and that she knows she has won. And she wants them to just accept it, get used to it, like admit I won, I beat you, and just deal with it. Back with Lucas and Tom, they're having dinner, making some small talk. Lucas doesn't like the Xeroxed Bronzino of the
restaurant. I'm telling you, this is why you say things are shit. Because most people like that don't like things or don't want you to know that you like things. Tom compliments the food, but Lucas hates it. If Tom had come out with the I hate the food, he might have gotten a little PowerPoint. But instead, he proves exactly what Lucas wants. Because as soon as Lucas says it's bad, Tom's like, yeah, we might have been ill-advised. This wasn't a good choice.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm going to fucking kill Greg. Like, Greg is dead. I'll talk to
dead.
Greg.
The way he's Greg? Just like immediately, fucking Greg.
He just like instinctively is like, let me fucking kick Greg in the
I'm
nuts a little
beat
bit.
Because Greg up because of
whatever
this fish.
Greg did, he did it poorly, and we need to figure this out. Lucas then says, okay, Tom. Why don't you pitch yourself? Pitch yourself as the guy. Pitch yourself as CEO. Tom says, listen, you know, I'll keep it simple. Low costs, high margins. I will, you know, eat any kind of shit that needs eating day or night, any time of day that shit needs eating. I'll eat the shit. Look at what I did for cruises. That was a big, huge pile of shit sandwiches, and I fucking ate it. Also, not mentioned in this conversation, but I'm going to mention it for him. I, you know, Tom was willing to go to prison. Mm-hmm. He wasn't happy about it. He didn't like it.
But he was going to do it. He was like, I'll do it. I'll go to prison.
He was going to eat that particular feces sandwich. And then, you know, he's happy to fire anybody anytime. Like, he'll cut heads off and scoop out eyeballs in his own words. He will make Greg do that. But still, anybody that needs firing, he will fire. And then Lucas is like, what about on a hang level, you know? And then Tom is like, man, I'm a grinder. I grind because I worry. I worry about, you know, my career. I worry about my personal well-being. I worry about everything, and that keeps me up at night. That makes me means I'm working all the time, and I'm going to be worried about your interests. And I think this was very convincing for Lucas, the way that Tom is completely and totally subservient. And not just that, but I heard in the official Succession pod, Sarsgaard said that he, in his mind, Lucas noticed that Tom wasn't at the funeral and he was working. And he said, aha, there's a guy that just works.
Yeah.
Like, he just will work for me.
I think it's also like incredibly honest in a show where everybody lies. Tom's life has been absolutely fucking ruined by his job, by his anxiety, by working for ATN, by being with Shiv. Like, everything he does makes his life worse, and he will just keep doing it in this pursuit of nice things, of wealth, of security, of status. And I think that is very appealing to Lucas, because that's exactly what he wants. And he sees that Tom is already someone who's in a deep amount of pain and personal turmoil. And that's great, because that's exactly what Lucas wants. Lucas wants a pain sponge.
He sees that turmoil. I love that term, pain sponge.
So good.
Lucas sees that turmoil. He sees the subservience of Tom. And he says, okay, let's see how
Yes. How subservient are you?
Let's see how badly you want to lay on my lap, lapdog. Here's my concerns with your wife, Shiv Roy. My concerns about her are, number one, on a just business level, she has too many ideas. I don't need that. I have my own ideas. My mind's going way too fast. In fact, I probably have some sort of ADD kind of underlying issue, and I don't need somebody coming in and kind of like mucking up what is already chaotic thought process. I need somebody who's just going to execute and follow orders. And then also, you know, there's this thing where like I kind of want to fuck your wife, and you know, I've already done that with Ebba.
And I think your wife would fuck me. That's what he says. I think she would fuck me.
Under the right circumstances, I really think your wife would also fuck me. Sorry if this is weird, by the way. And to which Tom replies, no. We're men. We're both men.
That's when he cinches the job. That's it. That's absolutely the moment that the job is his.
He ties the fucking bow on it right there. And Lucas says, you know, it would get messy if I fucked your wife. And again, she wants it. And so I thought, why not get the guy who put the baby in the baby lady?
Lucas Mattson, the world's biggest misogynist. Just like unbelievable.
Next prompt. What the fuck does that mean? can you explain that one to me?
Okay, so.
What does that mean?
I think that Mattson is like an old school, like piece of shit misogynist. Yeah. Like he is like. Well, a woman doesn't get pregnant. A man gets her pregnant.
Right.
Rather than me hiring a woman who is stupid enough to get pregnant, like, why don't I hire the guy who was clever enough to get her pregnant? Like, he's
right,
an,
right.
It, I think this whole
like,
the line
good
is
good move by you, Tom.
Good move by you.
Yeah,
I mean,
smart
I think the real truth is, like, in that moment, he's going off Tom's like we're men line. But the real truth is, he just wants Tom because Tom's going to do what he wants and be his pain sponge, and he hates women. But I like the way he tries to explain it, where he's like, "Why not get the guy who put the baby in the baby lady?" Even Tom, I feel like, is just like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" But I'll take it. I also just want to say, the moment when Tom does not, I feel like Tom really, when Mattson says "pitch me," Tom thinks he's pitching to stay in the company after the merger.
Right.
He has no idea. So when Mattson says that to him, Tom's reaction is just like, so fucking good. He saw it coming even less than anybody watching the show.
Let me just need to push back lightly, because like all Lucas did is refer to this man's wife to his face in a very coarse, sexually charged
language. That's normal in business situation.
And
just locker room talk.
And he sent, you know, potentially gallons of his own frozen bodily fluids to, you know, one of his underlings. But does that make him a misogynist?
Okay, I actually have to agree.
He's just a very generous with his frozen blood
kind of
person.
Do you understand how strong you have to be as a man to be able to give up so many gallons of blood? So I think you make a good point. I think, you know, some people may call him a misogynist. And, you know, maybe being an old school misogynist is not even a bad thing. You know, if you hate people who have babies, cool. Like, maybe that's working good for you. He seems rich. I mean, it must be going quite well. But I think you were right to call me in on that one.
I look at Lucas and I think, where does all the blood come from? How does he have so much blood?
How does he have so much blood? I need to know his secret.
He must be different than me. He must be a different species. He must be better somehow, because that man just is pumping out blood.
Blood.
And I've just got a meager, regular human's amount of blood. That is a Superman over there. That's what I think when I look at Lucas.
Yeah, I agree.
Greg then conveys this lightning bolt to Ken, that Shiv is out and that Lucas is looking at somebody else. And he does so with a promise, trying to extract a promise from Ken that they could quad it up. Meaning, add Greg to the three and now it's four and we're quadding it up, baby.
Dude, I just want to say, Greg's tried the I have a secret thing too many times. This is the second time. Also, I do want to point out here, Tom I feel like is actually going to be very successful in his new role. Because
I think so too.
When Greg comes to ask him what happened, Tom does not tell Greg. Tom has realized that Greg is a loose link, sink ships kind of guy. Like, he is the weakest link. He's going to try and betray you. And that's just how it is. So Tom doesn't tell him and leaves it vague. But Greg, proving his worth in the corporate backstabbing space, uses a phone translator to listen in to the Swedish people's conversations. And that's how he finds out. But Tom assumes that he somehow gleaned it from their conversation and is unhappy. But I want to just say, Tom, he's learning the lesson. In the old days, he would have told Greg. They would have celebrated. They would have done a little disgusting brothers dance. They would have probably like done some weird masochistic fighting, which actually they get to later. But I was very impressed. I thought, wow, Tom, he's coming up as CEO. Like, he understands now. This is serious.
Well, Tom, I think, understands that just as he is Lucas's pain sponge,
Greg is his pain sponge.
Greg is his pain sponge. Greg is the man who you can use as a footrest in your office. Greg is the man who you can tell
to do crimes.
And though he will eventually rat you out because of the crimes, that's a known quantity. Mm-hmm. There's no surprises with Greg. Greg's a fucking rat.
Yep.
Greg will rat to whoever he feels like he needs to rat to. And once you know that, Greg is very, very predictable.
And quite useful.
Quite useful. Quite useful, it turns out. We go back to Barbados, where things are happening. The siblings are coming together under the idea that Ken is going to be the guy. And here's how it starts. First, Ken basically tells Shiv, after learning the news from Greg, that, hey, you're out. Like, Mattson's looking for somebody else. It might be Lawrence Yee, a vaulter. It might be somebody else, someone with business chops. I don't know. They're looking at somebody else. So why don't you, call somebody, like, figure it out. Like, just confirm it. Don't take my word for it. Go and confirm it. And Shiv goes, she gets a copy of the CEO press release and finds that her name has been crossed out. There's just X's, like a TKTK placeholding X's, and she knows it's real. From there, Ken goes swimming after making the pitch for, hold on to your seats, everybody. Ken makes the pitch for himself as CEO.
Shocked.
I know this is unbelievable.
You never saw that coming. Huge twist.
Shiv and Rome joke very casually about murdering Ken. I mean, they could have done it right there in the waves, just drag him down.
I think there's a momentary truth that they both consider in that silence. And I wouldn't have been surprised to see it go that way. Honestly, they probably would have been better off. Kendall fucking sucks. He's a terrible person.
I think if Ken slipped off that little floaty platform and into the waves and was struggling and saying, hey, help me, I have a cramp. And I think they wouldn't necessarily pull him out.
Yes.
I think they might move towards him with a slowness that would allow him to drown, I think.
Yeah.
But neither of them are brave enough to actually kill, which is why I think Ken should be the CEO, because Ken can do it. We know that Ken can take a life.
You know what he's really good? He's really good at delivering a pitch. I can't wait to see him pitch this to the board.
Yes. After that, they go to the kitchen where Shiv and Roman decide, okay, well, Ken, you are the king. And so we're going to play this childhood game that clearly they had been playing, Meal Fit for King, where they just take all the stuff from the kitchen and put it in a blender and blend it up and make the king drink it.
Another classic Succession moment here where everything you learn about their childhood is horrific. Bitey, a game they played in their childhood. Fit for a King, where you just make people drink disgusting things. Everything is about humiliation and brutality and cruelty. But this is also one of the most heartwarming scenes in the show.
It is.
Which is just incredible.
Because it's just wonderful to see them all getting along, as Lady Caroline
says. They are siblings in that moment. Like, there's no question that these are brothers and sisters.
Roman licks Peter's special cheese.
Oh, no, Daddy, don't lick my cheese. It's perfect. Cheese. One of the best Roman moments in the whole show.
Roman then pours the fit for a king potion over Ken's head. And the three of them leave Barbados together, a unified, powerful voting bloc.
Boom.
And you can tell that they are together and they are unified because they arrive at the airport and they're talking strategy. You do this and I'll talk to this person. And here we do
and
this.
And they're wearing and matching black outfits.
Matching black outfits. And then they get into three different cars to go to the same location. What?
What? What?
That
what were they
detail,
thinking?
That detail is perfect. But
yeah,
power,
it's
also
so
a power
good.
Move.
I also...
Like,
I
it's
read
a power
this,
move.
It's definitely, it's a big time power move. You never share a car. What is this, a
never
carpool?
Never share a
what
car
What is this,
an ever.
Uber carpool? No, thank you.
Yeah, so, if I'm in a car with you, whose car is who riding it? No one
exactly.
knows.
Who's,
if I'm in my own
driver
car.
Is here?
Right. Whose driver is this?
Whose driver is this? Is that my driver? Is that my driver?
Right. If
is
I tell
driver?
The driver, pull over, I need to just take a shit in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that driver listening to? You
are they
going
to listen to you?
That's right.
Are they going to listen to you?
And that's why you always have to ride in separate cars.
They have some really great moments like that in the show. There's a brilliant interview right now with one of the writers of Succession that's at The Guardian. It's like, it's not an interview, actually. It's a think piece that she wrote about how the story of making Succession. And one of the things she talks about is that they had a consultant for how billionaires behave. And yeah. one of the things she pointed out is she said their shoes only ever touch carpet.
That's right.
So they're wherever never, they go, yeah. they go from the car to the, you know, airfield, there's a red carpet. They go to the house, there's a carpet. Their shoes never touch the ground. That was like blowing my mind because when you watch it and you watch moments like this, you see that it's true.
Yeah. They it's never. Like these, they don't have coats.
They don't have coats. That's a big one. They don't wear coats. They never announce that they're about to eat. That was no. apparently one of the ones that she got pulled up on a lot. Like, you can't have Marsha coming in and saying, this is, you know, it's dinner time or food is served. Billionaires don't do that. We knew that already, but they need a yeah. consultant on Succession to tell them that.
They arrive separately at Connor and Willis, their dad's old place. Connor has created a complicated two-tiered sticker system to allocate Pop's belongings to whosoever has the highest priority sticker in the particular sticking circuit round, depending on what tier the sticker is in. Connor and Willa are, we learn, going to do long distance because Connor, of course, is going to be the ambassador to Slovenia. And Willa is going to stay close to New York, the New York theater scene, because she's got stuff cooking and she's ready to keep it cooking and that's that. And she seems very excited about
they're very excited
long
both
distance.
Of them Jason they're both very excited as Connor says for this new then, chapter in their life.
And we don't know much about what's going on with Mencken, but here is where we learn from Shiv uh-huh. that there have been setbacks in the court system for Mencken. So is Slovenia really going to happen? We don't know, but Willa seems a little troubled by the fact that her yeah. husband might be living with her in her gigantic home.
I like the way that Shiv says, oh, wouldn't you be lucky you'd have him all to yourself? Now, this, I think, is actually one of the most telling Willa moments, because I think Willa has been playing an unbelievable game up yeah. until this point. And I think here her end game is truly revealed, which was put up with him long enough, get rid of him somehow, and then live in this giant mansion, which I own with never-ending funds.
Yeah.
And once this sale goes through, I will also be a billionaire and I'll get half of everything if we get divorced. I feel like she has played such a good long game of being supportive to Connor despite all his bullshit that this is a great pull-out-the-rug moment when you see her face drop when
yeah.
she thinks about actually having to be married to him. This
it's
is a,
so good.
It's so good. I wrote an article at IGN that was called In the Succession Finale, Everyone Gets What They Deserve. And I think that is Willa's getting what she deserves moment is like, you are even you thought you could play it, but even you are probably going to have to end up living with Connor drinking kombucha in this like
that's right.
horrible fucking nightmare house just full of
yeah.
terrible memories.
Very, very sorry about it, Willa, but apparently you're going to have to actually work to cover up the affairs that I'm sure you're having right now.
Yeah, she immediately looks on her phone when she says that.
Yes, she could. She can't wait for Connor to leave town because I'm sure. Listen, Connor, I can't even pretend that he's a nice guy, but clearly he's very devoted to whatever this relationship is. Yes. But, you know, Willa has needs as a much, mm-hmm. much younger woman with sharing none of the interests of her much older husband. I'm sure that she is out in the streets doing uh-huh. what she needs to do.
Looking and after herself.
Looking after herself. And now, Willa, I'm sorry to say, you're going to have to rent. You're going to have to go into your
yep.
bank accounts and rent some other place
rent
across
a
town.
Secret,
a secret, some secret
$10,000 a month apartment.
You're
going
to have to do it. I'm
you.
Sorry. You're not going to be able to bring them here because what if you get caught? That's it. It's
terrible.
I'm sorry to break it to you. Prompt. I don't even, I forget what number we're on, but next prompt. Can you make sense of the stickering system? How does it work? So,
okay.
Tell me how it works.
So
yeah.
I actually rewatched this multiple times because this this is a really wild Connor moment. One, more proof that this man has too much time on his hands. We know he does nothing. But the stickering sequence also confirms one of our biggest theories here at Market Moves, which is Connor is the only one of Logan's kids who ever really got to be his kid. And we get to see that a little bit further down the line. But I think the reason he takes it so seriously is that he sees himself as the rightful heir. He is the eldest son, no matter what someone else may say later. And he has already actually taken what he wants. We learn. He was like, yeah, there was a first round. It was just me. I stuck what I want. So here's how it works. Everybody goes around and they put colored stickers on things. They put one on it if they would like it a little bit. They put two on it if they would like it more. They put three on it if they would like it a lot. And essentially, the idea is this is an honesty policy. So if you don't really want something, you just put one sticker on it. And the idea is at the end, you count up the items that have the most stickers and whichever color gets to keep it. But of course, as it is immediately showcased, Roman just sees what other people have put on his and just immediately puts more stickers. Yeah. So like, it was a terrible idea made through Connor's dream that maybe these people could be honest. And then the best part is there's actually a secondary set of
so
mourners.
How does the second tier mourner system
work?
So
I think the idea is if I was Kerry, for example, who has been put with the second tier mourners, just continuing the constant shade.
And to be honest, is fortunate to be there in the
at
second
all.
Tier
she's,
and, not,
she's
and
probably,
not much lower.
She's probably only there because Lady Caroline let her sit in the front. That,
right.
like, really upped her legal standing. So if I was her, what I would do is you have to go in a brutal stickering fashion. Anything that didn't have three stickers, I just put three stickers on. And you're just keeping it. So that's
smart.
More, I think once you're in the second tier, you have to be more strategic.
Smart.
But the real truth is, none of them want any of it. Like,
they don't
care. And Connor's already taken what he wants. And they literally have a conversation about, are they even going to go to the great reallocation, as they call it. And they don't really want to go, but they're kind of like, shit, I guess we better go. So it looks like we care. So really, I think the secondary tier of mourners could end up with some pricey gems. Because really, these kids don't give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck. Tom arrives at the great stickering. And he and Shiv chat about the fact that she's going to be Mattson's American CEO. And Shiv...
Oof.
Tells him, you know, and this is what Tom was kind of poking around for, you know, sadly, no, that's all fucked. I don't know what happened. He's picking someone else, maybe Lawrence, maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know. And then she drops a very important piece of information for Tom that, well, how do I know? Greg told me.
Yeah.
What? And something about the way Tom reacts to all of this gets her suspicious.
Yeah. Can I say what that something is? Tom says... Yeah. Maybe you should just vote it through anyway.
Yeah.
I'm like, Tom, that is the least slick play of all time.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just vote it through. And then she's like, what? And he's like, oh, I guess I should tell you it's going to be me. I'm the CEO.
Yeah, it's going to be me. And she's, of course, like, what? No, you're, no way. And he tells her, no, it's going to be me. And right there, you kind of miss it because of the meltdown Shiv has. But that is Tom basically soft pitching his wife to switch sides. She had talked to him earlier about, hey, do you want to keep the marriage together? And now Tom is, without saying it, is saying, you voted through. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, you and me. And it's happening right there. Shiv then storms off to tell Ken and Roman the news that, holy shit, it's Tom. Tom pulls Greg aside and yells at him.
Into a bathroom.
It's so funny. Into a bathroom. Screams at him basically for the fact that he ratted out to Shiv when really it was him that
Tom
told
is the
Shiv.
One who just
he
confirmed
flat
it.
Out, he flat he, out
he's
told
like,
Shiv that
you did
he
it. He's like, you fucking snatched it away from me and now they have time to make a fucking, you know, a plan. And it's like, bro, you just did it.
You
actually did it. It was you.
You. But this is pretty, like, always keep your underlings guessing and always make them feel like it's their fault. This is, you know, textbook 101 leadership from Tom. Tom and Greg get into it a little bit with Tom slapping Greg. And then Greg, showing that he's got a little bit of spine, he slaps Tom back.
I think that's when he actually secures his place in Tom's court. Because Tom likes the fight. Him and Greg have always had this masochistic kind
really
of flirtation,
have.
This really toxic will they, won't they thing.
You can't make a Tomlitz without breaking some Gregs.
Exactly. I mean, they are one of probably, it's probably one of the most successful and popular toxic ships on the internet. And so I think that Greg slapping him back, that's a watershed moment for their relationship.
Tom calls Mattson to let Mattson know the other side knows. Mattson then gets, you know, on the back of his various minions and is like, get on your phones. It's
that's
time
one
to
of
activate
the best scenes.
Zombies.
Like,
let's go.
What does he want to do? Like, he's just like, I want to see phones. Phones. Get on your phones. Do something. Be on a phone. And I'm just like, what are they meant to do with the phones? I don't know, but I love it.
I think he's like, I want to see you calling the board members.
Yeah,
I
see you tell lobbying. Them to do something.
Make sure they are fucking on side. The Sibs arrive at the board meeting again in three separate cars. Power move. Ken driven by Colin, now officially his guy. Colin, probably the only person in the world who knows for sure that Ken killed a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who, like, could testify in court to the fact that Ken killed a guy. They march in feeling confidently. Shiv and Ken are projecting confidence. Roman is shaky, goes in his office immediately to hide. Carolina then pitches Shiv, as I'm sure she's pitched everyone, on let's get rid of Hugo. I've got this. We don't need Hugo. And honestly, like, Hugo opened them up to insider trading very, very recently. And I agree. Like,
yeah.
I'd keep Carolina.
I keep Carolina. And you know what else as well? I like Carolina's like very fucking smart because she pitches it to Shiv in a way that absolutely plays into Shiv's like ego, where she's like, look,
oh, yeah.
She's like,
so
if you
smart.
Win, she's like, we're going to change the way the system runs here. We're going to make a change for the good, you know, get rid of all the backstabbing, the lies. I think that means getting rid of Hugo. And I love that because it's like it plays into Shiv's liberal delusions that she's somehow going to make things better by whatever naive, weird shit that she ends up doing.
Ken sits in dad's chair, feet on desk, to receive Stewie. The, you know, Shiv and Roman look at this with something like revulsion, but they get it.
They're like, it's just a chair, but also...
Bleh. Yeah. And then Ken says to Stewie, listen, we have it. Okay, we have it. Like, so come on board with us and maybe we make you chairman of the board, you know, and it just gets you super, super fucking paid. And, you know, we'll run stuff, but you get to sit there and just collect chairman of the board checks. What do you say about that? Roman then freaks out because Jerry is there and he spirals. He completely spirals. He looks at himself in the mirror, the kind of top of the drink carriage is a mirror, and he looks at it and he sees that his face, even though he had received a beating not that long ago, he looks too good. He looks too normal. And he's like, well, why? They'll look at me and think, Roman looks pretty good. Why isn't it him? Like, why is it Ken? Like, what's going on? And he's starting to spiral down. And he's like, and this is kind of Roman at his essence.
Mm-hmm.
He can't, they all the siblings can't win. They can't do the final thing that it takes to win. But Roman's version of that is he actually does win and he self-destructs while he's winning.
Yes.
Look at him with Mencken, right? That was it. The fucking golden ring he had, he ruined it.
Yeah.
All the times that he could have been CEO, dad approached him about CEO, sent him to executive training camp. He had the partnership with Jerry that seemed like a good thing. And then he blows it all the time. And here he is again, blowing it but not blowing it enough. He's like, I feel uncomfortable because I don't look like a complete piece of shit. And so in what is, I think, the scariest scene in the series, and one that speaks to just what a fucked up family this is, Ken hugs Roman hard to his shoulder, and using his shoulder like tears open his stitches.
And he keeps pushing his head against him, even when Roman's kind of crying out. It's really horrific. And
Roman just takes it.
Yeah, Roman's kind of crying, calling him a motherfucker, but he doesn't fight back. And I think that we really got a glimpse into Ken fully embracing that abusive side of his dad in the last episode where he told Roman, like, you fucked it. Like when he tells him, like, you fucked it. Like, he basically plays into Roman's insecurities. But here that turns physical. And this isn't even the last time he does something physically abusive to Roman in this episode. Like, he is ready to continue that. But he actually sees Roman even more as a punching bag than I think Logan ever did.
X-ray vision will be back.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
And we're back. We go to the vote. Ken is feeling himself. He's like, let's just vote now. Why are we even talking about anything else?
Can
let's
we
vote.
Talk about this, right?
Yeah,
this man, he sells himself. He's like, you saw me live in Plus. You saw me at the funeral. He's like, to his siblings, he's like, I can pitch an idea. I can pitch a vision. I'm going to come into this board. I'm going to pitch them a vision so good that's going to change everybody's mind. Instead, Ken walks in and he's like, your minds aren't going to be changed. You know me. We know how the votes are going to land. Let's just vote. I was like, oh, sir, your arrogance was too high on that one. This is Ken's ultimate fall. Now, look, I thought Ken was going to go in and flop the pitch, but I never imagined that Ken would go in and not pitch.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, one thing this show does really, really well, all good shows do this really well, but Succession is kind of a masterclass in how you do this, is you know, there's only really... It's hard to fool people who watch a lot of television. And so the thing you can do is you give them the thing before they think it's going to happen. Like with Tom, they basically outed that Tom was going to be the guy in the like early in the episode. They just let you know it's going to be Tom.
But then they're like, how do you get there?
How do you get there? And I think this part of it, Ken, how is Ken going to self-destruct? How is he going to lose it? How is Shiv going to blow it? How is Roman going to blow it? All of this is so perfect. So we go to the vote, and it breaks down like this. Frank, of course, yes. Sonia, yes. Don't know who she is. Diane, Lou, don't know who she is, but yes. Ken, you know where I stand. No. Sandy and Sandy, yes and yes.
Which is kind of shocking, because I think Ken did think he might have had them. They'd kind of talked about the Sandys.
Dewey, we don't know him, but no. Here's the shocking one to me. Ewan, who starts with the quotation from the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. Then he says no. He wants Ken to maintain control of the company. I guess he thinks Lucas is worse. What is his rationale here?
Absolutely baffling. I suppose maybe this is a bit of an indictment on Ewan because he still can't break out of that cycle. Or the other version of it is he is rejecting the billions that would come from this offer. And he's trying to make a statement in that way. But surely giving it to Kendall, a very non-serious person, will not do no harm. I do not believe that. I think this is a bit of an indictment on Ewan's hypocrisy.
Well, Ewan is, you know, of course, quite happy to criticize his late brother and the poison that he put into the world through his many, many media outfits. But of course, he's quite happy to live in the literal lap of luxury and security off of the money provided by those concerns of his brothers that he considers to have poisoned the nation, poisoned the lives of various people. So Ewan is extremely compromised. And here in this moment, I was just surprised that he would be so, like, obviously compromised in this moment. That he would just do it flat out, be like, I know
keep
I said
it in
a
the
lot
Roy
of things,
family.
But like, fuck it, let's keep it in the family.
Fuck it, let's keep it in the... He was like really moved by Kendall's speech. He was like, thanks, bro. Like, I was feeling it.
Stewie, no. And I love it. I love it. He goes, no, Team Ken, baby.
Team Ken, baby.
I fucking love that Stewie gets burned by Ken one more fucking time. Here it is. What, like, how many
one
times has he believed in this guy?
Time. And Kendall's like, do it for me, man. Do it because we're friends. Like, this is the one, man. Like, we're going to do it. The thing I really love about this scene. Oh, you know what? Continue with the vote breakdown before I say it.
Roman, he wavers.
I thought he was going to be the one to flip it.
He wavers, but then it's a no. So we have 6-6. Yes, no's. And we go to Shiv, the tiebreak, the final vote. And Shiv is like, I need a second. What? Yeah, I need a second. I need to go to this other room and just like pace around. Ken is like, what the fuck? He and Roman follow Shiv to the other room where a fucking shit show circus carnival of idiocy breaks out within everyone seeing in this glass.
It's a
glass room. This
everyone
happen.
Can hear it. I just want to say my favorite fucking thing about this, and it plays into everything that Succession has done so well. I absolutely love that it is just a fucking Russian roulette of where Shiv would have sat. If Shiv wasn't the last vote, I don't believe she would have gone against it. I think if she'd have sat anywhere else in that room next to Ken, maybe what next to you, and I think she would have voted no because
that's
she didn't
so right.
have this huge
God,
power.
That's smart. Yeah.
But on the, she ends up sitting in the place which suddenly she has this life changing $1 billion power that she has never had, and of course she uses it to fuck over her brothers. But not just that, I think that weight is just so huge, and Sarah Snook absolutely sells that. Like, when she walks out of the room, she's not just doing it to be petty, as much as I would love that to be the answer. She feels the fucking weight of this choice that she has been given, but it's so random.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It really is all about where she sat.
How crazy is that? Just
it's
bonkers.
So crazy. So they get into it and
Kendall just fucking loses it.
You know, Shiv is just kind of groping around for any rationale that makes sense. And she grabs one that actually does make sense, which is, Ken, you can't be you. You killed a guy. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Remember when you killed a guy? Remember what in Italy when you admitted to us that you killed a guy? And Ken is like, no. That didn't. I just false memoried that. That was like,
I made it up.
I just needed to say something in that moment. And we were, you know, in this weird place. And I was just talking. That was like, bullshit. I'm good. I'm clean. I never killed a guy. Don't fucking worry about it. Can we just go back in there and vote? I'm good. And then Roman says, and then he screams, I am the eldest boy.
Which we know.
I am the bloodline.
Isn't true.
Connor fucking exists. Yeah, like, can
Connor
we just say that Connor
exists?
I love the dismissiveness.
I know. That moment is so crazy because he's just standing in this office building and he's screaming, I am the eldest son. I am the eldest son.
What a wild thing to scream.
And
like,
everyone
it's
in the office, if they weren't already aware that you'd lost it, that's when they know. They know that you are not a serious person, just as your father said. And Kendall's screaming bloody murder about, I'm the eldest son, I deserve this. Even though when they were in Barbados, they all revealed that Logan had told them at different times in their life that it would be them.
Of course.
So they'd all been played into this same cycle. But Ken,
so Roland is, Ken really feels it and believes it, that that is the case. So Roman points out, like, well, listen, if you're going to say that you're the bloodline, I'm just repeating Dad's words here. You know, it's not me saying this, but this is what Dad said. And Dad would say that your kids aren't even really Roy's. They were not truly his grandkids. Sophie is adopted. And Iverson is like the son of some contractor, filing cabinet maker, whoever that worked on your house, right? But also half Ravis.
I will also say, Roman sprinkles in some racism here to really get Ken going. But again, Ken reacts in the most horrifically, another really scary moment where he just grabs Roman's face and pushes his thumbs into the scars. And it is like so horrific.
And everybody is watching this now. Can you imagine you're sitting there trying
about
to have
interns are watching it. The mailroom guy is watching
New
it. It's
Jess
not even
is watching it.
Everyone is
Colin.
Watching it. Not even We're just a- like Jerry and the people who are in that room. Like everyone is watching this and it is the most unserious shit you've ever seen. Even if they'd gotten Shiv to agree to the vote, this whole thing is proof that those three shouldn't be able to vote and their votes would easily be able to be like null and void in some kind of boardroom takeover.
Absolutely. Shiv's like, get off of him. Roman is like, don't touch Shiv because she's pregnant. What the fuck? And then Shiv manages to slip out. She gets back in the room.
And those two just fight. Like,
and those two just fight for another couple seconds. And it just fucking happens. By the time Ken gets in there, it's fucking over. It's over.
Yeah. It's so wins. Good because he stands up and he's like, after him and Roman are fighting, and he's like, we got it, we got it. Let's go to Frank. There's still a route here. There's still a path.
Yeah, we could still do it.
We can still do it. And Roman's like, no, we're nothing, man. Like, there's
fucking
nothing.
Done.
We're bullshit. And then Ken goes in and he's like, so where are we? Let's. And his hair's all fucked up and everyone just seen him have the fight. And he's like, where are we? Let's postpone the vote. Let's postpone the vote. He looks like his hair's like gelled up, like he's in a boy band. He's like, we'll just hold the vote out. Just hold the vote out for a little while. Like, and Frank's and Carl, like, nah, no, it's done.
Yeah, Frank tells him it's over. It's done. Sorry. Tom is CEO. Tom walks in victorious. Greg saunters up, and we get a taste of what the early days of the Tom regime will be. At Gojo Go. He will, first of all, strap Carl and Frank into their golden parachutes. And honestly, like, Carl made some, you know, Frank was like, what do you think? We're out? This is great. Like, awesome. And Carl was like, I don't know, maybe run it back. You don't want to run it back. Go to your fucking Greek island and get out.
Go to your Greek island. Look, the truth is, this is another great example of getting what they deserve. They're going to get their golden parachutes. That's secure. The legacy is no longer secure, as Carl has now realized, because he said some chatted mad shit to Tom earlier this season and was like, you are nothing. Nobody cares. Nobody trusts you. You will amount to zero. So I love the line. Frank's like, no way. Like, not Tom. And Carl's like, yeah, we should have slit his throat in the cradle. And Frank's like, yeah.
Goes without saying that we should have done that.
But they're fine. They got millions of dollars, billions of dollars.
Maybe billions.
I think billions probably from this deal. So they're gone, strapped into the golden parachutes, shot out of the airline, but they'll do okay. They'll land softly.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Don't worry too much about Frank and Carl. Jerry will stay on because in Tom's view, she knows how this nightmare circus works. And
she's one of the only people who actually knows how to do her job.
She knows how to fucking do her job. Hugo? Sorry about it, my guy. You're out. Carolina's going to stay
in.
On. And Greg is like, what about me? What about myself? Where do I land in all of this? And Tom's like, well, you're fucked, man. You know, you make $200,000 as an assistant. That's going to come way down. It's going to come way down. You're going to fucking get killed on salary. You're going to get absolutely murdered. But, and then he puts a sticker, one of his black stickers on Greg's forehead. I got a place for you, buddy.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to save you, because he owns Greg now. And Greg smiles. Greg loves it. Greg wants to be involved. He's in.
And then we get these wonderful little mini scenes, wordless, of the three siblings in the wake of all this. Connor, mm-hmm. we don't care. He's fine.
He's doing whatever. He's like, he's chilling.
There is Roman at a bar.
Alone.
And you get the sense that he will be fucking fine. Like, mentally. Of course, like, it's a tragedy that they've lost control of their father's empire. It is so heartbreaking. And all they have to assuage their feelings is just billions and billions of dollars that they will get for the sale. But is that really enough? No. But Roman will be okay.
Yeah, it's
psychologically.
Like,
he seems
psychologically,
like he will bounce back.
He's reached his rock bottom, and I think it's very sad to see him alone in this moment if you ignore the fact he's a terrible person. But, like, the route that he has gone on this season has been incredibly bleak. But I think that you're right. Roman's alone. Really, Roman was kind of always alone. So
Roman
he'll probably be fine.
Roman is the same. Ken, we see walking through Battery Park looking fucking shell-shocked.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you know, a couple of dozens of billions of dollars in cash and stock. It's cold comfort when what you mm-hmm. wanted was the company.
He needed this. This is all he could do.
Yeah.
What's this? He doesn't know, but he's entitled to do it. He wanted to do it, and now he can't do it.
Now he can't do it. And now all he has is, like, you know, what's the sale price? Like 90, 80 something?
Yeah, he's got like $10 billion, nothing. That means nothing. What's he going to do with that?
What can you do with that? You
can't
do
anything
with that. So he's shell-shocked. He's walking around and Colin is following him from 10 steps behind, as he will do for the rest of his life. And we notice that, by the way, have to say, when, Ken was attempting to scoop out Roman's eyeballs in the conference room, and it was turning into a scuffle. Where was Colin?
Mm-hmm.
Colin was not there. Colin can't wait to not take a bullet for Ken.
Yeah, Colin, I know. I was watching and I was like, is Colin actually just going to like push Kendall into the water? I was like, I don't think he's like, this is not a man who's there through loyalty. This is a man who's there through blackmail and threats. Like, I don't know how long Kendall's going to survive.
They apparently did a scene where Ken tries to go over the railing and Colin pulls him back, but then went with the scene we see. And then we see Tom riding off in some beautiful European luxury automobile with Shiv, the power couple, ascendant. He lays his hand on the middle armrest with his palm upwards. And then she places her palm on his, her hand. You couldn't say they were intertwined, but it's more like her hand laying openly on his. And that is the end of the series. An incredible series. I must ask now our final prompts. What do you think happens with everyone? We kind of talked about Roman, but where does Shiv end up? Where does Ken end up? Where does Connor? I guess we'll do Connor. Where does Connor and Willa
I think Connor and Willa end up living in that house.
Yeah.
Being incredibly unhappy. I think that's the true ending of everything that is inevitable. I was thinking about this a lot when I was writing about the show. They all end the show exactly where they began it, just exceptionally wealthy and incredibly unhappy. And I think that continues. I think Connor and Willa have the best chance of making it because they have some weird shit going on there. Like, maybe they'll just end up being in like an open relationship and having all their lovers live in the giant house. Like, I see a version where they could be okay. I think Shiv and Tom are immensely successful and deeply, deeply depressed. I also, my friend James, who I watch Succession, we always watch it and talk about it afterwards. He made a great point when I was talking about everyone having their just desserts in this episode. Shiv essentially becomes Lady Caroline. She is a trophy wife of a figurehead, a wealthy woman who has zero power in the business space that she's in, but will likely spend a lot of time influencing Tom's choices. And she's about to have a kid who she's already admitted she will not raise, who will be raised by nannies. And I think in that way, she gets another incredibly depressing kind of situation. Where I think the hardest one to call, where do you see Kendall? Where does he go from here? Does he pop back with some terrible tech startup? Does he try and make a comeback?
I think Ken, listen, Shiv magnanimously offered to, for no fee, just give her brothers the IP for the 100. You know, I'm not going to.
She was like, I'll do that for free because I love you.
You can just have that. You want to have that be your little startup. I think Ken goes back to something like that. I think whether it's the 100 or something else, you know, Logan once famously said to his kids, make your own damn pile. You know, why are you fighting over my shit? Go make your own money. And I think that Ken will eventually, I think this is obviously going to be the defining thing of his life, losing his dad's company. But I think that he will attempt various schemes to make his own pile, none of them being quite successful enough, but not to worry because he's got so much money that he can just keep.
He could never spend it all.
He can never spend it all. He'll be fine. Roman, we said we'll be fine.
I want to put a prompt to you. I think that this is a show where everybody, for the most part, has gotten what they deserve in like a bad way because these are bad people. I think if there is a true winner at Succession in a non-existential Tom style, you won, but you're trapped in a hell of your own making, I think it's Jerry. Because Jerry was there sign the Golden Parachute deal, which I'm sure she will still get because she was there to legally sign it. She's going to get her huge payoff for putting up with the Roy's bullshit. And then if she wants to, if she is so inclined, she has a choice to be a part of this other Gojo Go and stay in this space that she's kind of been in. Now, Jerry's not a great person because Jerry enabled the Roys for a long time. But within the logic and rules of the show, she is one of the few people who ever tried to hold them accountable even a little bit and kind of call them on their bullshit.
I agree with you there. And I think, honestly, Frank and Carl, too, they got out.
Yeah, they got out.
Carl, congratulations. Your Greek island is on the docket. Here it comes.
I want to see that
spin-off. You don't need this shit anymore.
The Greek island summer holiday spinoff.
I think what is so wonderfully tragic and really what makes this show so good and so high quality and so timeless feeling in the way that it, you know, evokes our emotions and allows us to ride along with these characters who fucking suck. It's that it's pure tragedy in the most definitional sense of classic tragedy.
Yeah, like here Shakespearean tragedy.
These characters have a fatal flaw, each of them, right? Mm-hmm. And there really is no... there's two moves that Succession has, which is the Roys try to get their dad's company and they fail. That's it. That's the cycle. And the show shows you that again and again and again and heightens the way that they lose it exponentially each time so that despite the fact that there really is this very methodical and one note kind of
predictable move.
They're gonna lose it. You know they're gonna lose it. But the question is how, and how devastating will it be, and how hard will they try to win it only to lose it this time? Mm-hmm. And each time they lose it because of the fatal flaw. I think about like Shiv. Shiv is the woman, you know, the feminist who told a woman, a survivor of sexual assault at the hands of the people who worked for her father's company, to just take the fucking money. Just take the money. You know, and like she will constantly sell out.
And when she was bonding with Mattson, as soon as he told her about Ebba, she immediately went into PR mode. How can we silence her?
Yes.
I'll deal with this. I can help you deal with this. Don't worry about it. She will constantly sell out her own morals that don't exist. They don't exist.
She pretends they exist because she thinks it helps her in the realm of like public consumption, but it doesn't. And if she has a fatal flaw, it's that she's very smart, but thinks she's smarter than she is. Ken's fatal flaw is that he fucking can't close. He just can't get there and close.
Entitlement and arrogance. In fact, that is something they all share. He has that exact same problem that Shiv has in Barbados, but it has plagued him throughout his whole life. He expects the win before it's happened. He can't close. He never makes the deal. He just expects the deal to come to him.
And then Roman, who I think you could argue is maybe the most talented in terms of a social... You know, in terms of the part of the job that is in Lucas's words, vibe checks, is just like hanging out and talking shit with other powerful people. I mean, you'd say Roman was weirdly the most able to do that. You think about the way he, you know, initially before his downfall, the way he related to Mencken was both of them roasting each other. He understood on an instinctive level that powerful people want to feel like there is something that awakens their cruelty when you just lay down. You need to spar with them just enough that they feel like you're on their level. And Roman weirdly understood that, but his fatal flaw is that he just couldn't, in victory, he needed to destroy himself.
Yeah.
When he got the big energy,
saboteur.
He got the big energy spot at the funeral. He blew it. He blows it constantly. And the fact that these characters just did those fatal flaw, like self-destructions again and again and again, and yet every time you're just like, holy shit, I can't believe it happened again.
Yeah.
That is hard to do and is what makes this show so
unbelievable
affecting.
Writing. It's just such a powerful show. And I love how we had all kinds of theories and predictions and were wondering about the way that they would end this show and how out there they would go with it. But the truth is, the reason this hit so hard and feels like the perfect finale is it follows those established rules, like you mentioned about the character archetypes. But also, it is that same mix of just absolutely bleak, but incredibly realistic. Like the fact that these characters end the show wildly richer than they were before, at least in like liquidity and like real money that they can have, but they still have a tragic ending. That's so realistic. Kendall will never pay for the fact that he killed someone.
No,
he will never have accountability.
No.
So in the world of the show, they give him the most realistic punishment, which is having this one thing that he always wanted ripped away from him. And that is really interesting because I think in this trend of eat the rich kind of programming and filmmaking, which I do love, you know, the Menu, Triangle of Sadness, Ready or Not.
Yes.
Those offer very viscerally cathartic ideas around how people can get their revenge. They get killed, they get mutilated, they get eaten, they get burned, they get blown up. And it's like, but Succession doesn't do that. Succession works within the world and says, look, here are these people that control everything in your life. They fucking suck. They're ridiculous. And what we can do is show you the worst thing that can realistically happen to them, which is being trapped in a loveless marriage, but still being incredibly rich, being alone and isolated in Roman's case, but still being incredibly rich. Kendall not having the thing he always felt like he was entitled to, the throne and crown that he's wanted since he was 7 when he was told it was his. He can't have that, but he's still incredibly rich. And I think that's why the finale hit so hard, because those rules and that cycle is so key to what Succession does well. And they totally understand that and really pulled it together. I saw people, I think it was Vanity Fair, did an article where they were like, the season 4 of Succession was a mess until the finale. I don't agree. I thought this season was brilliant. Yeah. But I love that even for people who weren't understanding or vibing with or following this season in a way that felt impactful, that finale was so strong that it pulled all of those threads together and made it work. Like that to me shows that this is not just recency bias or people being like, oh, the finale's good. Even people who didn't like the 4th season are like, oh, this makes it work. That's how powerful it was that it can turn around somebody's view of the whole season. I personally think Succession has always been a show where every season is better. And I think that the 4th season follows that. But yeah, I mean, what a finale. Just unbelievable stuff.
Let me ask you this. Did Shiv actually win? Because Shiv, so if she would have gotten the job that she was gunning for, CEO, American handpicked CEO of Lucas Mattson's GoCo, she would have been powerless, or she would have needed to be truly powerless, have no influence on Mattson's thinking, just be the cutout person, and then she'd have Tom in her pocket and not the other way around. But of course, like, that was never going to happen. So is this actually the best outcome for Shiv, where she looked at it and said, here's what keeps me in the mix. I stay by Tom's side. I'm in his pocket. We've got the next in line of the lineage of the Roys with us. And we're just doing the thing that we've already been doing. But now we're trapped in it even more devastatingly than before. And unlike Ken, unlike Roman, unlike Connor, who cares about Connor, I still am in the mix. I have Tom's ear, and sure, Tom will never pitch Lucas on what I think he should do, but I'm in the mix somehow still.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. One of my I think there's two things that drove Shiv in that moment. We get the great moment when she's in the room and they're fighting with the kids. And she says to Kendall, she says, I fucking love you, but I cannot stomach you. And I saw a great tweet that really sums up, I think, the 50% of it. Somebody was like, you know, such a good tweet. I need to find it to credit this person. We'll try and put it in the show notes. But yes. They said, you know, people are saying Shiv, you know, voted against Kendall to save him from an abusive cycle. And they were like, but have you perhaps considered that she's just a hater? I do think that that is 50% of, I think pettiness was 50%. She didn't want Kendall to have it. But I believe the other 50% was, as you pointed out, self-preservation. I think Shiv weighed up everything, all the outcomes, like Doctor Strange and Infinity War, and she worked out that that is the best outcome for her. No question. She doesn't have to work under Lucas Mattson. He has no influence on her life. She does not have to be the fall guy for any of his schemes, the bad India numbers. She can essentially live as off the grid as a billionaire can, raising her baby. But I also believe that Tom is easily manipulated. And if she really did want him to put in things into action, she could whisper in his ear. She could parcel tongue him. She could, you know, be the person who is really running the show if she wants to put that much energy in. So I do think on a power play level and who got the best outcome in the cynical Roy overview, Shiv made the power play move and made the right choice for her and her terrible ways.
I agree. Incredible series. What a close to it.
Ugh,
extremely rewatchable show. Sad to see it go, but I think listening to Jesse on the kind of after show little video featurette, I do agree with them that it, Logan dying, the funeral, the Gojo sale, it feels like a natural ending place.
It does.
Even though it does, you understand that a writing team of this caliber could have come up with something excellent, but it does feel like a natural place to end.
We always talk about it. One of the hardest things, especially if you're a comic book fan, if you love TV, is to end something on your own terms. The show doesn't get canceled. The comic book doesn't get given to someone else. So the fact that the team got to end it on their own terms in a way that feels really organic and natural and definitive, that's just a gift.
Well, it's been wonderful helping you build your bankroll here at Market Moves.
You should be much richer now.
You should be so, so wealthy and powerful now that you can have your own Tom. And if you're a Tom, you can have your own Greg. And if you're a Greg, you can hopefully work your way up by being a pain sponge for somebody else or a pain pig for somebody else. We wish that for you, a future of sucking up to the rich, sucking the biggest dick in the room, being the pain sponge and riding that to the success that you deserve. Always remember, if there's someone rich and powerful out there, just suck their dick. We want to leave you with that. We want to leave you with that.
An important life rule for everyone.
From Market Moves.
A show that has now been canceled by the network.
Yeah, up next, Nerd Out.
In today's Nerd Out, where you tell us what you love and why, or a theory that you're excited to share, Joe pitches us on Netflix's Voltron Legendary Defender.
Hi, X-Ray team and listeners. I want to share the amazing content that is Netflix's Voltron Legendary Defender. This series is a reboot of the original and, on its own, fantastic animated series from the 1980s, and in so many ways honors the original content. The newest Voltron series leverages a variety of animation styles, from the expected traditional action animation to occasionally incorporating Japanese anime styling, including some fantastic Naruto-style runs. The storyline adds a layer of heart and emotion that most of us wouldn't have expected or appreciated in the original series, tackling topics like death and loss, grief, found family, discrimination, and the ultimate goal of protecting those you love. There's also various levels of LGBTQ representation throughout, though potentially not as much as some fans may would have liked. Hashtag Clants. In the end, Voltron Legendary Defender gave us both a trip down memory lane for us millennials and a great story that continued to develop across 8 seasons. I tend to be a bit of a heartless person, but spoiler alert, in the last episode, I was full on weeping knowing that this was the last episode I'd see this family. I encourage any fans of the original 80s series and anyone looking for just a fun space rom-com dramedy to check out Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix.
Thank you, Joe. If you have theories or passions you want to share, hit us up at xray@crooked.com. Instructions in the show notes.
That's it for us, Rosie. Any plugs?
I'm here on X-Ray Vision with you doing this cool show twice a week. I'm on Letterboxd, Rosie Marks. You can also find my writing at places like IGN, Polygon, Den of Geek. I'll have another cool Den of Geek story coming up soon.
Woo!
And I will plug my friend Nikesh Shukla, really brilliant writer. He is currently writing Spider-Man India. That book's going to be coming out soon in the wake of Spider-Verse. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll also have him on the show soon.
Love to hear it. Catch the next episode of X-Ray Vision on Friday, June 2nd, where we will discuss all things across the Spider-Verse, and along with an interview with director Kemp Powers. Cannot wait to see Across the Spider-Verse.
I'm ready to see it. Subscribe on YouTube, where you can watch full episodes of the show and check out our Discord to meet and hang with tons of amazing fans and listeners, plus me and Jason.
We're there. 5-star ratings, five-star reviews. We need them. We got to have them. You got to give them to us. Here's one from Still Dixie Landings to me. Knowledgeable, great team and lots of fun. Thank you, Still Dixie Landings. X-Ray Vision is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Chris Lord and Saul Rubin and executive produced by me, Jason Concepcion. Our editing and sound design is by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Video production by Dylan Villanueva and Rachel Gajewski. Social media by Ewa Okolati and Caroline Dunn. Thank you to Brian Vasquez for our theme music. See you next time.
Have a good one.
Hey, Mike, this is Histoff from Marine. Yeah, I want to talk about the Gojo sale today. You know, a guy, let's just call him a source, so talk about it on background. I think your listeners might find this really interesting. I got a buddy of mine. We go to the Giants games together. We've had season tickets together for a long time. We go see the Mets all the time. He's a buddy of mine we go way back. Anyways, he's, let's just say he works for Ken. And apparently in the wake of the deal, Ken was crying. His hair was all mussed up. He said there was a fight. The kids were fighting. Ken tried to scoop his brother's eyes out. He walks down to the battery. He almost jumps in the drink. My buddy had to apparently get him out of there. And guess, here's another thing. My buddy says it's not the first time Ken's been in the water. He just left it at that. He left it very, very cryptic in that kind of way. And let me tell you some of my guy, Colin. Sorry, edit that out. Whatever I just said, the name I just said. Can you edit that out, Mike? No? Okay. Well, what I was going to say is my guy is just, my girl, or whoever he is, he's a very straight-spoken kind of guy, and he doesn't always speak in riddles like that, Mike, so I think there's something serious going on, and that's all I have to say on the GoCo deal, Mike. I'll take my answer off the air.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.